sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Oil surges as U.S. production falls. Panama Papers are raising major questions. Markets fall as global economic growth fear is renewed, and earnings season right around the corner. All this and much more on episode number 458 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, how are you? This is Andrew Horowitz, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, going into the second week of April 2016. I just got off a plane, was in New Jersey for a wonderful family event over the weekend, flew into Philadelphia airport, got some of those great pretzels, had a Philly cheesesteak at this, I think it was John's Roast Pork Stand, which was recommended. It was okay. Not the best I've ever had. Everybody probably that's listening has a favorite place in Philly that they like the cheesesteak sandwich. And you could probably give me some recommendations for the next time that I happen upon that town. But this time had some of the pork they had, some of the cheese steak sandwich. Okay, nothing great. It was actually freezing, nowhere to sit, so we were outside. So that kind of probably took down the overall experience as well. We're going to have a short show because, like I said, I just got in and I have a few things prepared, things I want to talk about going into next week that I wanted to get out there. You know how committed I am to making sure we get the show published each and every week, at least with something to talk about, because there is a lot to talk about. Clearly, the Panama Papers is something that has been brought to my attention by many listeners saying, what are we going to do? Is this going to be a problem? What's your take on it? Now, if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on, there was a leak of about a million pages of documents that was leaked from a law firm down in Panama that specializes in setting up offshore trusts and places for asset protection, as well as tax avoidance. And what they found was that many of the people that actually set these up were celebs, politicians, many people in high places. And the big question was, why were they doing this? Why were some of the people in the highest levels of government around the world setting up these offshore trusts, funding them, and with what money? Why were they trying to do tax avoidance when they're, in fact, promoting, obviously, paying taxes by the people that they are, you know, the citizens? So big problem. As a matter of fact, already we've seen that the Prime Minister of Iceland has stepped down, resigned, and we're probably going to see a lot more coming out in the future. I really don't know the depth of it. There's a million pages of documents. Not all of the information has been reviewed. That's a lot of documents, a lot of trusts, a lot of offshore accounts. What I'm starting to see, though, is already there's a scapegoat. Already there's fingers being pointed at the banks. That how did they dare allow this to go on? How did they once again set up these accounts to enable this kind of tax avoidance, tax havens, and this type of facilitation of these accounts? Don't they know better? So I think what's happening already is what you're going to start to see the news get massaged in such a way that it's going to take some of the overall, I guess, the spotlight off of many of the people that maybe aren't supposed to be doing what they're doing in these kinds of types of transactions and pointing it right at the banks as a way to obfuscate what's really going on. Because if, in fact, we see that many of these offshore havens were set up in a way to avoid not only taxes, but more so to hide money that maybe was gained from some type of maybe payoffs, kickbacks, or anything that was not exactly legit, there's going to be a big fallout here. And if the expectation was that this firm was a firm that was to be trusted, and in fact, if they were hacked, if they were somehow this was not just a leak, but if it was a hack and these papers got out, there's a big problem. And really the reverberations around the world with this is going to be pretty large if we have some significant leaders that actually were setting these kinds of things up. Now, a lot of them so far have been outside the U.S. We haven't seen some of the names in the U.S., maybe senators, I don't know. Maybe others that have set these kinds of programs up to hide money. There is a difference, though. In the U.S., one of the rules is that any income, as a U.S. citizen, any income that you make on a worldwide basis is considered taxable, no matter where it's held, no matter what it's held in. And if, in fact, you do have income that you make that's in an offshore trust, it's supposed to be taxed here in the U.S. Now, other countries around the world don't all have the same kind of rule with their own home country. In other words, they allow you to set up accounts in other countries, and then they don't necessarily tax that. So it's going to be interesting to see what, in effect, is the actual fallout from some of this. But there is a potential for some very significant embarrassment and some heads to roll on the political front here. So we're going to have to watch that. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw last week, because last week was a down week. In fact, we saw the S&P 500 fell about 1.25%, the NASDAQ down about the same, the Dow Jones was down about 1.2%, and that was after several weeks of obviously great gains. So what happened? We did see that there was actually good economic numbers. We saw that there was a pickup in the growth of the service sector. We saw the ISM service sector come up with a 54.5 reading, which was good because it was big concern that over the last 5 months where we saw a drop in that and a continual slowdown in the services, that the potential was that there was going to be a move below 50 the way things were going. And again, below 50 is contraction. We saw that the week before that the ISM manufacturing number actually came in above 50 for the first time in a number of months. So it was good to see that in unison, the services and manufacturing or non-services were actually doing very well compared to where they were. At least they're changing their direction. We also saw that there was the continuation of the Fed coming out and discussing a variety of different things. Yes, Yellen was continuing her story with, well, you know, we're going to watch what's going on. We're going to be very accommodative. We're going to allow things to go a little bit possibly further than we expected. Inflation maybe to get beyond our mandate and to make sure that, you know, any of the problems that we saw around the world are not going to come home here to roost in terms of the economic slowdown that we're seeing, you know, in China, in Japan, in Europe. Yet at the same time, once again, we saw many other Fed officials throughout the week coming out and contradicting that, saying that, yeah, we need to have more rate hikes. As a matter of fact, we need to have one like right now. So the minutes came out, and we did look at those as, I guess, a neutral positioning by the Fed. Overall, there was a rather overwhelming majority that said that right now is not the time for another rate hike. Things were growing a bit better. But if, as you read through this, there was some softness in certain areas. The Fed was still concerned primarily about the global backdrop. That's what the minutes really revealed, that the Fed is very concerned, not so much with the growth trajectory and the position currently of the U.S. economy, but really about the global backdrop. The word global was used throughout the minutes. And that showed that the Fed obviously has more than just a mandate to keep inflation moving along to their target as well as the employment rate, but they're now looking at not only markets but also the global backdrop and making sure that that doesn't have any significant problems bringing it back home. On that, the markets came in a little bit because they weren't seeing an overly dovish commentary in the minutes, but then turned around realizing that the Fed was very aware of the global environment and was going to be watching it carefully, so there wasn't as much to be concerned about. Markets rallied on that throughout the day once the minutes came out, as usually happens when you see anything about the Fed released or a commentary or Yellen speaking. But the big news probably was that we saw that oil jumped like 8% last week, right below the $40 level for WTI crude. It's one of its biggest weekly moves in a while. And that was really primarily Friday's move, about 6.5%, when there was another announcement of a continuation of the drop in rig counts in the U.S. And on top of that, some rumors that OPEC is once again talking about the potential for a production freeze. And as the rig counts are coming down here in the U.S., we're seeing that production is starting to shift a little bit. And even though we saw a massive build for the last several weeks, we did see actually a draw of about 3 million barrels for the week. One of the first drawdowns of oil inventories that we've seen in some time. And when you see the rig count continue to come down and the production numbers as they are, and on top of that, you're seeing a draw in oil, that is giving the sense that maybe the worst is over at this point. And maybe it's possible that actually we're at a turning point, and a lot of the short side of the market is covering, and that is doing a massive job of pushing up the price of oil. And obviously that really helps a lot of things. For example, the bonds, the junk bonds and the oil related high yield securities start to see a better bid to them, and the markets like that. So that all was really good in terms of the overall setup. Now, coming up this week, what's really important to know is that it's the beginning of earnings season, and that is really going to, I think, trump everything. Starting on Monday, the quote-unquote official release of the earnings from Alcoa is going to be the signal that, hey, earnings season is open. And you're going to start to see companies like Fastenal and CSX on Tuesday. Wednesday, we're going to see some retail sales number and a Fed beige book. We'll see the PPI again. And then we're going to see quarterly results from some of the banks like JP Morgan. And then we're going to see throughout the week Bank of America, BlackRock, Wells Fargo. And then on Friday, Citibank and Regions Financial. So the banks, which have also been hit pretty hard recently, as a matter of fact, they're the worst sector in the S&P sectors this year to date. Even worse than materials. I mean, they're definitely the number one worst position of any sector, any main sector, core sector of the S&P 500 year to date is the financials. And the big concern is that the slowdown in trading, the slowdown in bond and fixed income trading, a lot of the layoffs that we're seeing in those departments, as well as the fact of the losses that they're going to take due to much of the exposure they have in the oil sector is really at play here. So we're going to see what's going to happen there. Big question is going to be whether the fundamentals match the technicals. Whether or not the earnings that are coming out and the expectations for earnings are right on, or in fact, if there's something way off on these earnings. If in fact the market has come up to a level that's way too high compared to where we are, or if in fact there's just too much pessimism in the markets right now, and in fact a lot of the worry that we've seen, a lot of the headwinds with the dollar that recently abated and possibly even turning into longer term tailwinds are going to be looked at as something that was in the past, rear view mirror, and now it's, time to buy. Things are looking a lot better because earnings really haven't been affected. We'll see how that plays out. I'm really not quite sure. I'm not in the camp that earnings have really healed yet. And I'm really not in the camp that we're going to see growth of earnings start to turn around so quickly yet. But anything's possible because it's a very fluid environment with currencies, input costs, inflation issues, easy money liquidity, share buybacks, fixing of balance sheets due to secondaries, as well as debt paydowns. A lot of things that are at play here that could really affect things. I mean, if companies come in and they do secondaries, come in and then pay off a lot of their debt or a chunk of it, well, all of a sudden they don't have the cost factors associated with that debt payment. And maybe that will help their bottom line. If it helps their bottom line, we'll see a much better earnings. And that all of a sudden changes the whole picture from where analysts had assumed we were going to be to where they are currently. So a lot of at play here right now, a lot of areas that are going to really mold and shape this current environment in terms of the next couple or maybe even three quarters of earnings that we're going to see from companies. And not only that, like I said, the dollar, depending on where that dollar plays, is going to have a lot to do with it, because we have seen the dollar come down about 5.5% over the last few months. And that's a big move. That's a tremendous amount of additional benefit for companies to have the opportunity to have much lower costs and be much more competitive, more so. So the dollar is still high, so the cost factors are still good when it comes to buying foreign products to maybe put into their manufacturing cycle. However, the dollar has come down to a point that maybe the cost for the fully manufactured goods to export is much better, and therefore they're getting a lot more sales. That's the kind of structure that we're seeing right now. And there, again, there's so many different sides to this that it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. As I mentioned, I just got in, want to have something to get you started for the week ahead. Not much more from me right now. It's kind of towards the end of the weekend and didn't really have a lot of time, frankly, to put this together. So we'll be back next week with a great guest. If you have any questions, and maybe this would be a great time to tell you that you could write to me, and we'll maybe do some listener questions over the next couple of podcasts. Write me any questions that you may have at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we'll make sure to either answer it personally or put it on the air, and we'll answer it that way. You can also listen to DH Unplugged each and every week. Participate in our Closest to the Pin competition. Go over to dhunplugged.com and check that out. And of course, follow me on Twitter. Sorry for the last minute. Sorry for the short show, but we'll be back next week with some great stuff. Again, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.